I do think that we're better than what other states would provide. We don't want to give away the farm. We don't want to just have them here to have them here. We want an economic benefit from it. But I think that is the challenge. How much do we give? Do we give one company 14 and a half, or do we give them $1 million? That 14 and a half is, you know, we can talk about that in the same terms. Is it worthwhile to give a company that, or should we just say, hey, come and if you need some incentive, look somewhere else? And my view is it's a blend, Mr. Chairman.
As we frame the dispute as we go forward, you know, I'm not much different than many other people on the committee or the position they will be when they have adult children. I've got a son who's a PhD in chemical engineering and works for a major oil company and responsible for a field in southwest Wyoming, but he lives in Texas because that's where he has to live. I've got another son who's an electrical engineer that worked in Fort Collins because that's where the job was. And I'd love nothing better than for those people to have the same quality of jobs that pay those, the kind of salaries that they're getting at those places here in Wyoming. And all of us are acutely aware by our friends, neighbors, that there's a lack of jobs. And we also have been, there's probably not a person here that hasn't been a tireless advocate for more money for highways and for cities, towns, and counties. And I can remember being one of the persons that was sitting in caucuses 10 years ago, knocking down or insisting more money for cities, towns, counties, and highways. Having said that, when we began to look at the entire budget, as we're giving tax incentives for companies that were recruiting for jobs, and as we look at our budget and it's a 60% dependency on minerals to sustain what we're doing, one of the things that I see is that the only thing that we're doing to diversify our revenue base, our tax base, if you will, is putting more money into the permanent mineral trust fund. I understand your argument that that money is then invested in a national, with national bonds, invested in companies that are on the stock market. But those companies are paying as dividends. We're paying income on it, whereas they're different kind of dividends than we would see for putting money into the state. And by putting more money in the permanent mineral trust fund and ensuring that we'll have more investment income later to help pay government, there is another level of diversification, and that diversification is your tax base. And so as we frame that dispute, believe me, we all understand everything that you say. None of us don't understand it, but we're also throwing that other issue is, how are we going to pay government at this level if we have fluctuations? And we know that a mega data center in Laramie provides great opportunity, but it's not going to pay tax revenues to the state. We don't have a corporate tax. We don't have an income tax, and the property taxes don't come here, nor do the and so there's very little that they do to help pay for what we're doing here in Cheyenne. And one of the things that we can do is take some of our earnings now and make sure that we're increasing our investment income so that we'll have those revenues. So it's a great debate to have. It's an important debate to have, but it's just a it's hard to go home to your community and say, I understand your needs, I understand you want more revenue and income, but at the same time, I fear that if we don't do these other things, we're going to magnify and enhance problems because of our tax structure 4, 5, 10 years from now.
And I appreciate it, and I think it is, as you said, it's a valid debate. And as I recognized yesterday, and when I addressed this group, you know, I understand the history of this group being supportive of local communities. That's where we all come from. My point of view is, I believe, somewhat different than yours. I am not for stopping and investing in the markets. I understand that we need to continue to do that. I understand that it served the state well for many years. But I also believe, and I don't want to repeat myself, that during these volatile times, that this is a very good opportunity to put some of that money back into the community. Now, the challenge to me seems to be, if we can get to the point where we all agree, and maybe we don't, but if we did get to the point where we all agree, listen, our local governments needs more money, then the question is, you know, should it be a one-time, or is there a way to provide a greater and a predictable funding stream for them so that they can do the long-range planning that leads to better efficiencies and use of the money? That is what I was trying to solve by my proposal that I made yesterday and have otherwise made since then.
And those are good points. It's been my experience, though, that when you give any entity earmarked funds, what they do is they build them into their budgets. They still come back to the state government and want the same amount from the general fund. It simply doesn't occur that you give somebody an earmarked revenue stream, and they say, we're pleasant, we're okay with what you gave us. And rather what happens is the size of government swells to the revenues. So having swollen to the revenues, they still want to participate in surpluses. So part of it is managing that those expectations too. And the I suppose you could say, look, what we'll do is we won't give you the second year of your general fund appropriations, and we'll give you this in lieu of that. But that's not being proposed. So, we'll manage within the dollars. I have confidence that we'll get there. But we'll get to first debate it here, and then we'll get to debate it on the floors, too, to see where everybody comes along.
Well, I appreciate that. And I'll say again, I recognize, having heard it before yesterday and after, what the concern in this committee is. I would just make one brief last pitch. I think this is a very good time, and I do think this is a way to take some of that money to help our locals, certainly help highways. You've recognized the challenges with those funding mechanisms. But I do believe that this in part goes to economic development, to diversity, and I think it shows that while I cannot disagree that local governments may come back and say they want more money, having done this, it puts us in a pretty good position to say we gave you what you need, or we gave you a lot.
Well, having said that, I would say one other thing, and that is, you know, over the course of the last 4 or 5 years, we had some wonderful, wonderful surpluses. And we gave extraordinary money to a lot of entities, including the University of Wyoming, community colleges, communities. And if you were to say, okay, let's stop here and see how much of that money simply that really changed the lives or created jobs that are still here today, I'm not sure that your analysis would come to the end to say that was, in fact, economic development. I mean, it sustained government. It improved the infrastructure. And our communities do look better and things like that. But you could stop today and say, okay, we did both. We put money in the permanent mental trust fund, and we put money out in the communities, a lot of money, more money than you're proposing now. And you could see the benefits of it. And I could just remind folks that last year, if it hadn't been for investment earnings off the permanent mental trust fund, we wouldn't have completed the joint labs.
And I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman. I know you can say that. You could also say, listen, if we wouldn't have given that money, say, for highways over the last X amount of years, would we still be in the same place we are? And I would say, no, we would be in a worse place. I mean, you have to look at what would have happened if we wouldn't have done some of those things. And I know that when you were spending that money and appropriating that money, those were tough decisions that you made. And obviously subject to, you know, we don't know where we would have been had we not done some of those things.
Your second part of your recommendation is that what we do give to the cities, towns, and counties, that 75% go to projects, 25% operations. Suppose we don't earmark money, rather we just allocate dollars to the cities, towns, and counties. In the past, the last executive office said, look, you guys sort what formula to put it in. You do need to do formulas and between cities, towns, and counties. So let's assume that let's do it both ways. If you do the if we were to earmark monies during the session to the cities, towns, and counties, do you have in mind which formula at this point you would recommend to use of the variety of formulas? Have you gotten far along?
I don't know if that I'm that far along. Unless I'm not sure if you're referring to Governor Friedenthal, I think recommended a 50-50 split in terms of 50% for the locals goes to operations, 50% goes to infrastructure. Because of, I think, Chairman Berger's comment that they build this into their budget if you give it to them. Partly it would depend, you know, if it is more than a year, if it is 2 or 3 or 7 years, what I thought would be a better way to do it is a 75%, 25%, because I don't want them to build it into their operational budget, and then after that period of time, whatever it may be, to all of a sudden say, listen, we've got 30 employees. We're going to lose half of our police force if you don't do this. While they can still do that somewhat with regard to infrastructure projects, I think it's far less likely with regard to having that money go to infrastructure that they would build that into their budget than they would if you give them more on the operational side.
Actually, what we need to be thinking about, folks, is a couple things. One is that regardless of if the budget is used as the vehicle to get money to cities, towns, and counties, and we can do that by diverting revenue flows, or we could do it by just saying it's money that was going to go into the permanent or to the LSRA, we could appropriate that to the cities, towns, and counties. Then the first decision is, what is the split between capital project and operations? As a practical matter, I think that the more revenue you give to people for projects, then their local communities just starve their CAPCON budgets within their general funds. They do more operations, and then the effect is the same. But having said that, that's a longer debate. Once you do the allocation, then the question is, what's the vehicle to get the money to the communities, whether we use the budget distribution formula, which has hardship funding, it has I think we have two different vehicles to do it. And Harshman loves hardship funding because he knows that hardship counties need that money. But and that, Governor, is the if you look at Harshman's face and smile, you know that there will be debate there. So as your staff gears up over the next couple of weeks, you probably need to get familiar with. We have statutory allocations. What I should say is, how do you allocate among the cities, towns, and counties? And there's an allocation that's in the budget, and then there's an allocation that are in statutes. There's a variety of ways to get money out, depending on whether you want to give it on a per capita basis, put it out on a basis that gives weight to communities that have greater resources than lesser resources. And for us to evaluate it, one of the things you do have to do is take a look at sales tax revenues and see how the communities are doing. If one community is, if we hear, for example, that energy wealthy counties are, their revenues are coming back up. If one county is enjoying benefits from the Niobrara Play, then do those counties need as much as the counties that aren't sharing or participating in that? But well, the staff will be getting us information with respect to what's happening to sales tax revenue for local communities. So everybody will get that. You'll have that to know what that impact is on the communities. And then we'll have the staff update us as what the formulas are in the budget, in the statute, so we know what vehicles are to distribute. And, Governor, if you want to be part of that, then you need to kind of get up to speed with us as we go through.
We will do that, Mr. Chairman, and we would like to be part of that.
I would like to say that, Governor, I think you're on the right track as far as putting more toward one-time funding rather than the 50-50 split, more toward the 75-25. And I can say from our particular communities, they've got some money left over from a consensus revenue grant funding that we had before, but not enough to actually do the projects, the sewer projects and other projects that they needed to do. And that's where you see a lot of the local communities have large reserves. But those reserves are primarily there because they don't have enough money to start and finish the projects that they didn't have funding for in the first round of the consensus revenue grants. And so I think it's appropriate to put those monies into that type of one-time funding so a lot of those projects can be funded. And I think also it's important to put it in that type of a ratio because the local governments have made the hard choices already because they've made the cuts in their different forces that they had to as far as their labor requirements and their employees. There may be more cuts that they think they may have to, and this may help them not have to make maybe that second round of cuts that they don't want to contemplate. But for the most part, I think most of those hard choices have already been made. So I think we're along the right track there. When it looks at the amount of money that we're putting out, we kind of go back to the history of trying to be sustainable. So we don't have the roller coaster either in local governments or the roller coaster in our construction industry. So they're not, we need to be able to know that we're going to have that long-term sustainability in our construction industry because they don't need to buy equipment and sell equipment based on what we're going to do here. If we can have a long-term target, understand what that's going to be. Part of the problem is if we spend all of the money that we have in that 0.5% is that it robs us of the opportunity in the future to have that money for incentives to diversify our economy if we don't have enough carryover going into the next budget. So we need to have at least enough money to bring into the next budget. So if these other opportunities present themselves like the data center or these other things, that money's there so we don't spend our whole checking account down. So, I agree with the split. I'm not really comfortable with the whole $52 million, but I think we're going to get some money to highways and some money to locals. But I think we have to have a real comfort level to make sure that that's a sustainable amount past this biennium. And so that's really, I think, what a lot of us are going to have a conflict with ourselves is to figure out what is the right, I guess, heat of the porridge bowl, so to say.
Thank you, Senator. And I appreciate your comments on the roller coaster. I mean, that is one of the situations you face if you just say to Town A, hey, you've got $5 million. Well, they may not be able to finish their sewer project for that. So what they do is they'll go a quarter of the way. And what that means is they bring all the people in, they tear up the road, they put the road back together, and the equipment and the company go somewhere else. We've also seen with respect to School Facilities Commission where we put too much money in the chain, what we do is we draw in more out-of-state contractors, and they are here for the money, and then they're out of town. So that trend line and that sustainability that you talked about, I also think goes to the argument of having a predictable, more of a longer-term funding stream than rather a big spike where you ultimately just bring in a lot of out-of-state contractors who get the money and then they leave, and the job may not even be done, and then the city waits for 2 years to finish the rest of the sewer project. That also has corresponding costs and inefficiencies with regard to those types of projects. Many of those are just much better done to get the whole thing done rather than waiting, doing it piece by piece. So, but I appreciate your comments, and I appreciate the fact that you want to make sure that you have money left for the to provide incentives for other types of deals down the roads. I will tell you that when I went through this budget, I really did try to make the most difficult choices. I think when I got started on this, I think there was roughly $6.8 million left on the table. As you see now, I don't want to say this in the wrong way to offend anyone, but we tried to leave as much as we could on the table for the legislature, and I think it's roughly $52 million from 6.6.
Mr. Chairman, Governor, if you'd like to visit sometime about the virtues of population distribution, there are several, so I'd love to visit with you. to this fantasy of hardship. But anyway, it'll be interesting someday when Goshen County is no longer a hardship. And that's wrong. But anyway, that's just, I had to say that. But just a question, actually, and you mentioned about school CapCon, and I think it's been two bienniums ago when we put $500 million into the biennial budget for school CapCon, and we realized, I mean, it was too much. We inflated our own projects. And what are the folks that you talk to, I guess, or what is our capacity in these, in the highways and the city infrastructure? I mean, we can inflate our own projects if we're not careful. And what is that sustainable amount for our Wyoming folks?
That's an excellent question, and I do not have a good answer for it, because I have seen, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, or maybe I've lost track of time, a week ago, I saw on the front page of paper that a study was done on what it was going to cost to keep Wyoming roads going. And I don't remember what the number was, but it was huge. But I do know in Goshen County and other counties where we perhaps have this new oil play, and hopefully it's going to be great, that there's going to be challenges keeping up with that. And I also know that the number that I recommended in this split, the roughly $52, $53 million, is far short of what those in DET and those on construction companies thinks is needed in order to maintain Wyoming's road, let alone improve upon them. For example, up in Campbell County, where they've added some more lanes to Highway 59, there's a lot of projects like that that they say we can't even get to that are the current funding level, and even with this money, we're not where we want to be. So it's a difficult number. But I do know, or at least I believe, that the $53 million that I'm proposing here is not going to create that artificial spike that I talked about just a minute ago. I think that is a sustainable amount where we don't create this huge spike, have all the out-of-state people come in and then leave. The other thing I would follow up, you know, on the flip side of that, in towns and counties, during my a lot of my travels over the last year, I tried to hit every town I could, and I hit Hartville, Wyoming. Hartville, Wyoming is, I think, population 47. I don't want to diminish it. 47, maybe 48. And in Hartville, Wyoming, there is a company that a young couple came out from California, and they chose to move to Hartville, Wyoming. They looked all over. And as they say, they made a wrong right-hand turn, and they ended up in Hartville. And they started the Cowboy Coffee Company, which is great. If you go up there, you get a free cup of coffee. But the other business that they have is they provide translation services to companies and to people all over the world. But they can't have hardly any employees where they are because they do not have broadband in Hartville. And I'm not suggesting every little place needs, but the example is this. They chose Wyoming because of the quality of life, and they have a great company, but they are not able to do the business that they want because they don't have the connectivity. And we want to make sure in Wyoming, at least in my mind, that when we talk about these things and the infrastructure, that we are looked at not only as a quality of life, but, hey, I actually can move my company here and I can have that capacity. That's a little off your point, but I took the opportunity.
And the $50 million is certainly probably under that inflationary deal, but when you start, we're in a pretty small fishbowl. The state is a big player in this. When you put school CapCon, local CapCon, and then university, community colleges, and highways, and we put a lot into it. But just kind of curious where we think that point of diminishing returns, or we start inflating our own projects. But we think in schools it's around $300 million a biennium is what we've been told, and our experience shows us. But I'm confident we're probably well short of that. But anyway, thank you.
Mr. Derrier has a pretty good trend line on the school financing of what happens when you go too far above it and when you go too far below it that he's tried to do for that. But I have not seen a similar thing with regard to the infrastructure, which is your question.
To follow up on that, I think there will be discussion about whether we want to put more money into school facilities for construction, for a lot of reasons that you just articulated for highway construction. We have needs, but in that case, we have some money that's sitting in the account, and the question is, do we hold off on it and build later? So over the course of the next week, I guess, I would like you to have conference with the facility staff to see what happens if we wanted to spend more money on schools. How would we go about do it? What kind of construction delivery system would we use? But The as much as I hate to say it, Casper is up on the list. We need to get them off the list. Now, incidentally, when we're talking about Casper, and if you begin to have meetings with the gentleman from Casper, the coach guy, I'll give you a list of things to talk to him about on that. For example, you can ask him things like, did we use ARRA funds to build a juvenile detention fund? Did the state have to build their own courthouse? So there's a lot of things you need ammunition for to talk to him. And I'm happy to fill in the gaps.
Mr. Chairman, all I can say is number one on your life's place and number one in your heart. That's all I can say.
Well, it was when my grandfather and grandmother lived there. I'll admit that. Let's see. If any other discussion on local governments, the next item I want to, in the absence of that, is talk about capital construction. The first item that was not on my radar screen is the Sheridan facility. My understanding was that we had a great opportunity to buy a first-class facility there. We have lots of agencies out in leased space. We would be expecting it to move those agencies back into owned space that we own. And it wouldn't happen immediately, but now you're talking about, as I understand it, selling a building that we just purchased with in mind that we'd bring everybody into owned space, not leased space. So I don't understand all the politics of that, if you'd bring us up to speed.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I went through this and I saw the $437,000 just for maintenance needs, just the number itself struck me. Here's my understanding of the history on that building, Mr. Chairman. That building came up for sale 2009. The original estimate, according to the folks wanting to sell it, I think was $14 or $15 million, and then it was appraised, I think, for $7 or $7.5 million. The state got it for $5 million. The state bought it with the idea that we would move state agencies into that building, a total of 9 agencies. Currently, there are just 2 agencies in that building. In other words, we're not utilizing it in the way that was first intended when we made that purchase. If we did get it at a bargain, if it's at $5 million, and if it's worth $7.5 or $8 million, we have just prepared a draft letter, and we'd be happy to share it with you. I did not anticipate doing that today. That looks like to us that we would be better off selling that building rather than that state owning that building, and when we are not being able to, at this point, use it for the full intended purpose.
Okay, well, let me jump in here because I will anyway, but with respect to that building and what the explanation that you've given me is, I'm not certain is a full and complete understanding of what we did and where we're going to. So before we're going to ask construction management, of course, to bring us up to speed, but here's what I would assume the case to be. In general, and I understand there's a heavy maintenance fee, and if not all of it's being used, we can shut the doors and close off the heat in those parts of the buildings until we use them. Here's what I would expect. In a situation like that, I would expect that we are sitting out there and we're leasing X amount of square feet. I would expect that those agencies entered into long-term leases and that unless we wanted to terminate a lease on a given date earlier, we would have leasing obligations for the 9 agencies. And it might be that 2 agencies went through their leasehold period and they're now ready to move in, and that 6 agencies or whatever are sitting there without their leases ready to expire or will expire and will move in to. As a general rule, the analysis that we need to do is not how much space is occupied today versus what's in there, rather what is the total square footage that we're leasing for state uses in that area in Sheridan. And when those leases expire, are we better off to have them in owned space than leased spaces? And the owned space, the fixed cost is once. Obviously, the maintenance cost is ongoing. And it requires a larger, more long-term analysis than what you just provided, Governor. And So we'll be looking to the Construction Management Division of A&I to give us that long-term analysis. But more importantly, as we receive that, I hope that you would get the long-term picture, because if after learning that your opinion doesn't change, then that's important to us now. But I think when we acquired the building, we knew that we couldn't move the agencies in there right away. It was going to, you'd have to, now if we know that an agency can't move in for three more years because that's their lease term and we don't want to expend the cost, perhaps we should be more aggressively looking at lessees, private lessees, until the agencies go in. But I've still not, you know, I was part of the decision to authorize that expenditure. The explanation is a little bit different than what you provided. I'm not surprised that it's not full of agencies now, because we have leases out there, and I wouldn't have expected them all to end that day.
And, Mr. Chairman, I just got a note from the staff that says that it looks like the two agencies in there are using most of the building now. But in addition to that, I'd ask Shelley to explain that $437,000 and what the other problem with that is, if you would.
Chairman Nicholas, Chairman Berger, the $437,000 for maintenance for the building was requested via the budget process and recommended for approval by Governor Friedenthal. But at that time, the Construction Management Office did not anticipate the filling of the contingency reserve fund as well. So the SBC Contingency Reserve Fund was also replenished, and in fact, the maintenance for the building currently is being paid out of the SBC Contingency Fund. So in essence, there was an unintentional double-dipping there as well. And in reviewing the documents provided by the Construction Management Office, The plan did include, as we looked at the payback period, it did include putting all nine agencies into that space and used that lease space cost, which was $304,000 a year instead of the $228,000. And these are figures from memory, so forgive me if they're incorrect. But instead of the $228,000 a year that the lease was currently space for DEQ and Department of Health, the two agencies that are currently in there. So there was that, and then also the cost for the maintenance in the projections was a little bit different. So there's some reworking of those numbers that would need to take place. But in talking with Mr. Cathcart about the facility and whether or not there was additional lease space available, should these other agencies' leases terminate and they would be able to move in, I believe he answered that the space is filled and that at least at the current time there was no intention to move other agencies in.
Well, some of that explanation makes sense to me, some of it doesn't. The double dipping, if you're saying you're double dipping because you're presently paying out of the contingency reserve fund, which is lowering the reserve account, and therefore there's a double dip, I'd assume that if we've put general fund in here, then our contingency reserve account will stay static, which is generally what we want, because that's not what that account was designed for. So we'll work through that. I mean, if that's what you're – if there's another double dipping, then I'd stop it tomorrow if I were you.
Chairman Nicholas, Chairman Berger, the term double dipping was something that has been – mentioned in that they requested the full funding. They requested the full funding for major maintenance or for maintenance of the building, and then they were paying that out of the contingency reserve, SBC contingency reserve, and A&I intended to go ahead and reduce that request amount in their presentation next Monday. And if I'm speaking out of turn,
we'll get that. That's fine. We'll get that next. What we do there, we'll get those balances there. But in the end, I mean, generally speaking, we've done spreadsheets, and owning buildings is cheaper than renting them. That's not always the case, but and Rich will bring that. But And the explanation that you gave is a little bit different than what Governor you gave. So we've got some more work to do on that to understand it. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman. And the question I would have, too, for you, Mr. Governor, and staff is that there was a lot of dynamics involved when this acquisition took place in Sheridan. And also we moved the DEQ, for example, from leased space that was full. And now what's the question? What happens if you were to sell the building and you've moved an entire agency to Rockwell and they were previously in leased space that's now completely full? I mean, what happens to an organization like that, because it is a small community? And so I'm just curious as to how you've thought that through in putting that up.
Have you thought that through? Because, rhetorically, the one thing I would correct is, what if we chose to authorize you to sell the building?
Mm-hmm.
It would not be my expectation that the executive branch would ever go out to sell a building without our authorization. So if we were going to authorize that, what would we do?
Well, and that's why we brought it before you. Go ahead, John, if you had. I thought the question.
Yeah, we know how much square footage there is. We know what we were paying in prior lease dollars, and A&I can give us that data, and we'll figure out whether we were better off leasing or buying.
We also want to bring your attention to make sure that the $437,000, we are not double-dipping. And in any case, it seems like if that was the case, it was an inadvertent.
And if that's the case, if you were running the budget and you discovered that we appropriated funds twice for the same purpose, you have a budget office, and our expectation would be that you would clamp down on one and you'd say you can't spend it. So, we would expect that. Let me shift gears. Couple areas that are on our radar screen that are not within the budget. And, folks, there are a couple areas that are the prerogative of the legislature, and you will not find in the executive branch budget, but they are our responsibility. One is the Capitol building. We sit in here in a beautiful building that has no sprinkler control systems. If if something were unfortunate to happen, the cost to rebuild this building would be, I don't know if we could do it. So, Governor, we've begun a reserve account with an eye towards remodeling the Capitol building to put in sprinkler systems and fire protection. With regard to that item, I would ask that over the course of the next couple of weeks that you'd become advised of what the status of the Capitol building is, what needs to be done, how soon it needs to be done, so that at least you're aware of it. I don't know if you had any chance to even think about those issues.
I'm sorry, I have not.
Okay, if you would, and then the committee will have Rich will want an update with respect to what's the cost, what's the timeline, how to do those things. A second topic is whether or not we should reorganize state government to take out a lot of the IT functions and staff positions that we have put into agencies throughout government. And that's one of the biggest growth in our agencies, consolidate them and then build a new state-of-the-art data center. And the location was thought to be maybe the old DCI building over on an old Safeway DCI building on Pioneer, I want to say, or maybe it's just over here. Or maybe it is the Pioneer building. But anyway, for those of you who have gone through the University of Wyoming, you look at their data center. And then the question is, do we want to begin thinking about employing a third-party company to come in and manage it? Do we want to consolidate our data center, that sort of thing? Governor, are you aware of all of the discussions with respect to should we do a data center? What should we do with IT functions and state government? Should we be looking at outsiders, or should we continue to employ that IT function?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I can't say I'm aware of all the discussions, but I have been involved in some of those discussions and do have some thoughts on it. Having a state data center, that may be the way we should go. But I think we should move with caution on that. And the reason I think that is so is because as I see the future and where the tech industry is going, one of the, as you mentioned correctly, one of the continuing large expenses and increasing expenses the state has is on IT, and I mean from everything from software to hardware. And what we have seen some states have done is they started farming out some of that work to private companies. They do that not necessarily because the private companies can run it better, but because to keep up with continuing software needs, continuing hardware needs, that they view it as a better way to stay at the cutting edge and yet not have all this material in a building where they have to get rid of it. And that is still the challenge, I think. Probably all of us have got a old laptop sitting around that we don't know what to do with, that it can't, and that is a very large expense. So whether we do that or not, whether we build the building or whether we somehow work more in cloud computing or have a private outside contractor come in, one of the things that I think the state really needs to focus on is currently we are not where we want to be with regard to state agency talking to state agency and the use of technology. Not just telecommunications, where rather than somebody traveling from Cheyenne to Cody using telecommunications, but just as a whole, the ability to share information. And you see this from the courts to the agencies to our counties and towns, and it is a challenge. And one of the things I do think we should do is we really should have a strong presence for our CIO to make sure that there is a great effort on coordinating how we get the state agencies on the same page, ability to share information, ability to and desire to use the information. In my commitment letter that I'm having the agency head sign, that is one of the things I'm going to say is I want to see how you're making advances in the use of technology and what your suggestions are. We do not want every agency to have its own little kingdom, and I think that's where you're going on, should we have one place that does that. And I'm not dismissing that idea. I think it's worthy of look. I think we have to be cautious on that. Why we're talking about that, the CIO, as you know, is a contract position. And it's, I think, currently paid $200,000 or $205,000. That's a lot of money. That person was hired at a time when the market was different. And when you try to find somebody who has that skill, you know, that apparently was the market at the time. I would ask for consideration to make that a full-time position and one appointed by me. The reason I ask for that is because for the reasons you and I discussed, this issue of how we do this, how the state does it, needs some real leadership. I do think that there's an opportunity if it is a position appointed by me rather than a full-time position rather than a contract position. That may be attractive and open up the pool of candidates who may be interested in that. But this is an area, Senator, I wish I had could come with a list and say, here's how we resolve all this. I cannot do that today, but I can tell you this is one of the top priorities, I think, for the state, because this is going to become more and more and more expensive, which is one thing. But when it's more and more expensive and we still don't have the ability to use this, what we should be doing now to save the state money is not where we want to be. So this is going to be a big push for me to see how we can coordinate these things. On that list, should we start have our own data center, or should we look at doing it through a third party?
Let me ask you this then, Governor. Would you send us a governor's letter requesting the FTE change, conversion of that position from contract to FTA? And if you would, maybe propose some Section 300 language for the type of interim work that you would want to see towards developing your plans, your vision, if you will, going forward with IT role. I can't imagine that we would begin to develop a new data center without your 100% support, and we're transitioning A&I folks. So clearly we'll hold off on that for at least a year, but let's maybe begin to articulate the vision and see whether, if we put in something in the budget that would say, Appropriations Committee, you look at these things with an idea towards where we're going, then our colleagues on the floor will see whether they share that vision or not, and at least we'd have something to debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did put it in the letter this morning, and I failed to discuss it in my introductory remarks.
Topics next on CAPCON to the state office building. Rich,
Mic.
Thank you. Rich, would you resurrect for us the current information on what we're leasing in the community, the cost, and maybe redo that cost benefit to building over leasing in the Cheyenne community. You know what I'm talking about?
Mr. Chairman, I do, and we did quite a extensive study when we initially went to budget for design money on a new state office building on the St. Mary's lot. At that time, Mr. Chairman, we didn't own the Safeway property. So now we have an option that certainly may be a better option. But in this budget, there's a request for $600,000 for $250,000 to demolish and remove the Safeway building and $400,000 to do a level one, level two study to evaluate the feasibility of building a new state office building on the Pioneer Safeway property.
Now, does that only get you a feasibility study, or are we actually going to start? I mean, what if we wanted to move faster than that, to do level one? What would the next one would be, the level two, or?
Mr. Chairman, $400,000 will do the feasibility and preliminary planning. That is level one and level two. Level three is a package which is design and build, the design and construct. However, if you recall on the plans we had originally to go into a design contract on the St. Mary's property, we came to you. You guys authorized the design money up front. That is an excellent way to go because you don't have all those construction dollars sitting out there for a year, year and a half in the auditor's office. Plus, once you do the design, you can come back with really good numbers then on what the construction is going to cost. So if, in fact, policymakers, Mr. Chairman, you and the governor's office would like to move forward with a building on that property, you could appropriate funds for the level three design only. Based on a cost estimate, just a real rough but probably close square foot cost estimate, if we build a 150,000 square foot office building there at $225 a square foot, we can estimate pretty closely how much money we'll need for design.
Well, that's great. If you'll bring that to us, and folks, part of this is, too, that if we design the building at the right time, and my guess is that the Safeway lot is a better location, if we do it at the right time and coordinate it with, if we had the resources and could coordinate it with the this building, whenever they do the put in the sprinkler system in this building, we're going to have to expect that there will be legislative sessions outside, and where you locate the legislature for a year and a half while you're doing construction, is it an issue? You could build this building with open space and legislature move into there for the year and a half while this building's being sprinklered, and then after we're out of it, turn it into state office space. But those are discussions that we've had, and why don't you be prepared, Rich, to bring us up to speed on those issues when you come see us.
Mr. Chairman, that is exactly the plan that we discussed when we were talking about building the new office building on the St. Mary's lot. You may recall the estimate we gave for design dollars on that building at that time was $4.4 million. It was appropriated, but then during the budget, rougher budget times in a down year, that money was not expended for that design. Luckily for us, it wasn't, because now we own a better site.
Great. Thank you. We'll talk about that more. And then, Governor, if you become aware of or informed of those issues and other issues, whether we blow out the back of the Hersler building, because there's expandable space out in that atrium area, and you could use that. So there are a couple different options there. And one time when we get the resources, we ought to be thinking about that. The other topic that I've got for capital construction is one that comes back into our purview because, frankly, it's not very becoming for the governor to ask improvements to his quarters, but with respect to the governor's mansion, there are always two components to the governor's mansion. One is the private side for the private residents, and one is the public side, the public residents. When Governor Friedenthal came into office, we realized that the mansion was built at a time we didn't have a lot of resources. You could literally walk across the floor, and it would go like this. And we got part of the upstairs of the mansion remodeled, but the basement never got done. We didn't do that for a variety of reasons, in my recollection. One is because we didn't know if we had the floor joist system corrected. We had wiring to be done, and then finally the Friedenthal set timeout, enough construction. What we did ask the Friedenthals to do is to hold off moving into the mansion for about 6 months while we did that remodeling, and at transition times is the best time to undertake that work. And so they began to do work at the mansion to get it ready for the transition, and I asked them not to do any more work on the basement, which is actually part of the living room, or living quarters, until we had a chance to see what the consensus of the JAC is. And I guess, Governor, if we determine that it's appropriate and we want to earmark or dedicate resources to completing the private side remodel, would you and your family be prepared to live in your present quarters for another 6 months? Have you talked to your wife and talked to your security? Security has a big issue by this where you live, as you're finding out.
Mr. Chairman, my neighborhood is so much safer now that we have all that security there, so I like it. I like it just the way it is.
Well, what I want to know is whether you needed that security.
I've got two hellion toddlers. We need all the security out there we can get, right?
I guess the question is have you, if we want to investigate that, to do that work before you move in, it would be an imposition, but it also, both on you and the security, is that something I asked you to actually consider that?
And Mr. Chairman, I would never, my understanding from my wife is that the thought of packing boxes right now, I mean, this is a busy time for us. I would just say to this committee, whatever you choose, either way, to do something or not do something, have us stay where we are or not, we are completely fine with that. And that we just don't even want to make a suggestion one way or another. We are good. I mean, this is where we live now. We've lived for many, many years, and so that's whatever this committee says is good with us.
All right, folks, what we'll do then, what I'd like to do is ask construction management to do two things. One is there's not only the other side I didn't mention is the public side, and there's been a need to expand the public side for events and to redo the kitchen. So I keep wanting to say Senator Cathcart, now whatever you are, would you, I don't know whether you're construction manager or acting A&I or both, but would you dust off those, bring those to us? And then for all of you, I assume that if you're going out to the governor's mansion for dinner,
yes.
I think that there's nobody living there, so I assume that Catherine Boswell can probably take you to a tour and even go down to the basement. Is that's open now?
It is open, yes, sir.
So when you go, if you go out there, ask for a tour of the whole building, ask for what the plans are, take a look at the basement and the living private side while you're there, so that when we get to the budget, we can decide whether to give the go-ahead to complete the remodeling on the private side, and whether or not you would support or not the remodeling on the public side. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, I guess from my perspective, I'm not sure whether or not you can remodel that building and have it be the type of building that we would feel comfortable with our governor entertaining the CEO of the big mega corporation that's going to come out and maybe spend billions of dollars in our state. You know, I think what we need to really look at is to understand whether or not that building could be remodeled, whether it's at the appropriate standards that it needs to be, or whether it needs to be like the Safeway building, raised and rebuilt. I'm not sure what the other residencies of the other states around our area look like. So I think at some point in time, maybe we before we decide to spend money remodeling this, to me, it's like an old hotel. You can put new carpet in and new paint on the walls, but it's still an old hotel.
I'm glad you didn't use the pig analogy, but Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would echo Senator Meyer's comments, and I know that I've heard other comments from on the House side, that I think we need to have a full picture of not just possible remodeling, but also what is the incentive, what is the cost here between remodeling and actually just starting over. The governor's mansion obviously is a place of personal pride for the whole state. I think it's important that it appears that way when we have guests come in as well as the residents for the governor.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's do this then. Rich, you heard the comments. I mean, you can do the square foot analysis, but I think what happens then is that whatever your plans are for remodeling, you might dust them off and show people so they can get a sense of whether or not at the end of the day it's something that we're going to be proud of. The personal residents had always had small rooms and things like that. Maybe there are things that we can do, but you know, I'm also one of these people that believe that you can turn a hotel into a palace sometimes cheaper, but I also recognize that sometimes you can build a new facility better. So you have, does that give you some idea of what you need to be coming back to us, Rich?
Mr. Chairman, it does. However, just so everyone's aware, we did a substantial amount of work with Architectural Means on developing plans for expansion of the public side of the residence so you could accommodate, the governor could accommodate larger gatherings, that sort of thing, with kitchen remodel, et cetera. We'd certainly take a look at any amount of renovation or whatever we need in the private side. We are currently looking at some of that stuff now. The State Building Commission is charged with maintaining and taking care of the governor's residence. However, they have a stipulation there that the governor is not a participant in those decisions. In fact, Secretary of State Maxfield is the designated person on the State Building Commission who authorizes things to be done at the governor's residence. And by the way, I've spoken with him about the conversations you and I have had regarding the residence. He's really on board with all of that.
The idea of, maybe we want to take a step back and say, okay, what do we want to do? What can we do this quickly? Can we do the remodel and meet the objectives that Representative Edmonds and Senator Meyer just talked about, or should we be looking at a new facility, all of those? Let's take a look at it then. This is in the transition of the time's appropriate. We have to go back at 2 o'clock. Then after that, we've got a Rules Committee meeting that's going to take about, an hour. So we'll be back at 3:30. Maybe we're done with the governor. Let me give you the topics that I still have left, and I think these are all topics that we can cover with agencies pretty well. One is the backload on DEQ, the $1.5 million. I think that whether we agree or disagree with that, it's probably not going to live or die, Governor, on your recommendation. It'll be when your DEQ come in, but we probably ought to get from you a breakdown of the 1.5, how you would see it being spent as opposed to a lump sum. The second area is one of air service enhancements, and once again, if you could give us a breakdown of a schedule of what you would generally expect to see that, how you would, it may not be that you have an allocation, but give us maybe a breakdown there. But once again, that would come through on the YDOT. We'll have them in to talk about air enhancements, or we can find somebody else that's expert in that. The $4,361,000 for the livestock board, they will be in to talk about their own budget. We have the $1.8 million reduction to the UW for the GWILA, the Great Western, that's the Library Association, the reduction in half. Once again, I assume the UW is capable of talking about the impact and with respect to that. We have the Women's Prison and Lust, the $1.2 million reduction, and Corrections will be here to talk about that. Would you like to have the governor back to talk about any of those? If so, we'll have him back. Otherwise, we'll just move on to Department of Health. Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had some questions. I thought we were going to touch on perhaps some AML funding. Of course, our new governor hasn't changed any of our previous governor's recs, and also talk about a substantial transfer of money from account 3 to account 4 in water development for the Gillette Water. And I had some, you know, policy discussions, I guess, to have with our new governor.
Those with all of us and the governor, or do you want to bring agencies in to talk about those and have them with the agencies? We want to make sure we're all geared up on the issues to mark up if you've got ambitions or to put money or move money around. So you can begin to educate us by talking to the governor about those issues, and we'll bring him back. Or if there are other agencies, we can bring them back. Which is your preference?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe I'll do some discussions with the governor's office first and then probably handle it within the agencies. Thank you.
Okay, and that's fine. What you might do is once you have an idea of what it is you have in mind, and those are significant enough areas, obviously water count 4 is important to Gillette and what's going to happen there. But I assume that the Water Development Commission's on our schedule, are they not? Are they on that schedule, Bill? Let me put it this way. If they're not, let's put them on there because that's important. That'll also bring up the Gillette Water Project because that's a big area that we can't – I mean, we have some responsibility there. So we'll bring up – if they're not on the schedule, let's put them on the schedule. Let's get them on the schedule so we can talk about that. What other areas, Jeb? The AML will be Director Cora. I assume it's still Director Cora, and but we'll go through that again. I mean, that'll be through Cora, but he won't give the policy decision about whether or not it ought to be allocated for the STEM building or whether there's something more important there. What the governor has said is he supported Governor Friedenthal's recommendation to use it for that, but if you have other ideas, then maybe the governor is an appropriate person to talk about whether there's something more important than the STEM building.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess what was at the top of my list with AML funding is my concerns about future funding for our School of Energy Resources and how we have set up with one-time funding a continuing expense that, you know, of course, after the next biennium, we're set for the next biennium, a policy discussion about where these dollars will come from.
Okay, well, let's do this. With respect to Cora, when he comes in, I think Chris, make sure that he's up to speed on those issues. And then with respect to President Buchanan, if our staff or somebody who contacted to make sure that he understands we want to have a discussion with respect to what parts of the UW budget are based upon those AML and what's ongoing, and we'll have that discussion. Anything else? I don't want to cut the governor short if you want, because we really should keep him here as long as we want, but if everybody's satisfied, we'll cut him loose and we'll go to Department of Health at 3:30. Everybody satisfied? Okay, Governor, thank you very much. We'll be back at 3:30 for the Department of Health.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, thank you.